the word culture to me is about caring. It is figuring out different ways and new ways with the technology and remote work so that your people know that you care about them, that their leaders, that their managers, that their people that they look to for coaching really do care. And I don't just mean in a heart-to-heart human level, but they are interested in their work. They're interested in what they're doing, and they're wanting to help them get better at what they're doing and develop them and grow them.
Welcome to Centricity, the podcast dedicated to helping emerging middle market companies pursue growth and bridge the gap between sales and marketing. In today's episode, our host, Sean Doyle, meets with Ram LaPointe to discuss the importance of workplace culture as well as aligning sales and marketing. If this is your first time listening, we encourage you to subscribe and leave a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. Now, let's dive in.
Welcome to Centricity, the podcast for the C-suite executives who want practical, implementable, repeatable insights to break through barriers that hold back sales and marketing performance. Culture can be a barrier to hold back your business's performance. And today we have an amazing guest, Ram LaPointe. Ram is the founder and CEO of Capricorn Leadership. Ram is an experienced CEO. He's a leader. I've seen it. I've actually have a client where we've worked together, and he's amazing working with leadership teams, boards, and he is a key source for many executives to achieve ideal performance, create healthy cultures, and achieve results. Ram, do you believe in all that? I mean, that sounds like an introduction your mother would have given you.
It is a good one. A little long, probably, but yeah. I like to do all that work. For sure.
You've had some. Let's give you some credibility. We share a little bit about some of the companies you've led, because I know you've led some companies to exponential growth.
Yes. So over the last 30 years, I've worked for others as the CEO and president, and I've also founded 10 different companies. So a few of them were sort of quick flips, if you will, where we went in and did a little bit of a turnaround and improved the value and were able to exit quickly. But some were longer holds where we scaled from zero to 300 people. And these were in the technology space, the consulting space, a lot of things around human performance, training, culture, change management. And so all these companies were B2B, so not really brand names that people would know. But we worked for large organizations. So some of my clients have included Pfizer and Bank of America and General Motors. And so for most of the time in business as a small business holder, owner, we worked for Fortune 500 companies or large mid-sized companies. So my experience has been around working with those leaders and C-suite executives. And then is also on the startup side, entrepreneurial side, creating cultures from scratch.
Incredible. Well, actually, I'm glad you said that. I'd love to talk about two things today. One, sure, culture, and two, sales and marketing alignment. Because what I want this podcast to always be about is practical advice for executives who are facing real problems. And that's what you do for a living. So let's talk about culture out of the bat. You know, SHRM, the Society of Human Resource Management, recently released a study that said $223 billion is what we spend a year just in turnover. That doesn't even touch how much bad productivity or conflict, right, and wasted time. And that's just turnover. Right. It's an amazing amount of money lost. And business leaders, I would think, want to not spend that money. So marketing and culture have a lot in common, but tell me why executives, and maybe you've seen this, maybe you've not, why executives have a hard time justifying an investment on culture? Because, Ram, if executives agreed that $223 billion was wasted on the way the plant operated or the way accounting was running or the software, it'd get fixed. But culture just seems to be a hesitancy to fix.
Yeah, I think they actually are very similar reasons, I believe, Sean. Marketing and supporting everything to do with your business, right? The stories that you tell internally and externally, sometimes true stories, about what your business is about, what your products and services are about, it's very similar to culture. Those are the stories that you tell internally and externally about your people and how it is to work there and be a part of your organization. And so those storytelling areas are difficult for a lot of leaders because they're not as concrete. They're not as, even though there's lots of measures, whether it's turnover measures that you just talked about or leads and clicks and different, there's lots of ways to measure marketing and culture, but usually we're in business for something else. Usually our businesses are about a product or service that we have created or that we have managed for a long time. And that product or service is the main thing. Mm. And so telling stories about it or telling stories about ourselves, not to be too reductionist here, but those are not usually the core business at hand. And so the CEOs and the C-suites that I work with do take a bit of convincing and a little bit of experiencing positive results that you can get from spending time on culture and marketing. And it really, it's all about experience. So I read a long time ago, probably 10 years ago, that the four P's of classic marketing, product and price and place and promotion, were replaced by the four E's. And I won't go into all of those, but the big E is product is really about becoming experience. And if it's an experience, that is how your customers experience you, your brand, your product or service, your people. And that's the same thing for culture. It's an experience. So what's the experience like to work in this company, to give hours and weeks, days of our lives to a company that helps them be successful? That is ultimately what culture is about. What's the experience like? And yeah. I think it is difficult to measure it, but I do know, Sean, and that boards of public and private companies are looking more and more to understand how we measure and get sort of a handle on culture, because bad cultures cost us a lot of money. Mm.
Billions, literally. And that's sometimes those kind of numbers, they're shocking. They're designed to be shocking, but they don't necessarily say, that's not my company. But it is, right? It is your company. So you've got a churn rate. I'm going to really put you on the spot. What are some KPIs that matter, that are respected in the boardroom around culture?
One of the most prevalent used employee or culture metric has to do with engagement, right? So Gallup and lots of other polling folks have had engagement on there. And there's evidence for a long time that 70% plus of our employees are not engaged. Some are actively disengaged. And so that engagement number is usually bad news. And it's one KPI that's known because it's been around for a long time. I think that the important metrics going forward are more about the motivation and the ways beyond pay that we can get people motivated about their work. And so things like their performance in and of itself, right? Are they getting more things done without burnout? Are they motivated by more than just, you know, the dollars and the benefits packages? And so that motivation can be measured. There are surveys and ways to look at that. I think KPIs, not just retention of your people, but certainly their enthusiasm about the company they work for as ambassadors. So I would want every employee or most of my employees or team members, which is a better phrase, I think, to be excited about where they work and to tell people about that in a positive way on social media and their referral networks. And so referring people into the business to come work there, friends and family, is really that net promoter score idea. So an employee or a team member net promoter score, I think, is even a better measure than just how engaged are you.
I think that's really wise. When we look at sales and marketing and we're looking for a way to understand advocacy, what we're looking for is a lead that comes in that had no contact, no connection with a salesperson or directly with marketing, and you ask them, how did you hear about us?
Right.
Joe Smith, my friend, buys from you. Oh, that tells me a lot about Joe Smith, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's a great observation. And I love the use of the net promoter score that is so often used externally. Let's send it out to our customers. Let's get it done. You can throw a rock and hit a good net promoter score anymore. It's in every piece of software. It's ubiquitous. But very few people very few people use it internally with their team members. I'm accepting your review. No more employees, team members.
There's a book there's always a book, Sean. So I do a lot of reading and a little bit of writing, but mostly reading. And there's a book called Humanocracy that I think is just fantastic. And Humanocracy talks about moving from bureaucratic workplaces that really stifle individual creativity and sort of connectedness, where a lot of companies are, they're bureaucratic, to a human folk-centered place, which is, you know, seems pie in the sky, but there are lots of ways to have more autonomy for our team members, and frankly, our clients and partners on the supply side too, that allow us to be even better at what we do in terms of our product and service, the experience we give to people.
So if the McKinsey data is right, and what you're saying is right, then roughly the equivalent of 92 million people in America say they can work remotely at least part of the time, which is either a shift in thinking for a management team executive, or it's a radical way of thinking. And we're coming out of a period where that had to happen, and now it doesn't have to happen. And there's a lot being written about whether this remote thing is real or not, whether the shift happens or not. And obviously, if you're building something, you have to physically be present to build something. But let's get outside of those boundaries, Ron. What is, if you've got the answer, I would recommend writing this book. What's the answer? Is this remote thing? What's your take on it? That's, 58% of your employees today are thinking they can work remotely. So are those 58% of the employees frustrated if you don't let them? Or are they damaging the culture by working remotely?
Yeah, I think it's very disruptive change, certainly brought on by C-19, but it was happening before that, right? It was just accelerated by the pandemic. More than 10 years ago, I read about, as a CEO, I was reading about other CEOs that travel to their customer sites or to their different offices, and they're on the road a lot. And so I became a mobile CEO where I no longer had an office with stuff in it. I had a conference room that I would use in my office building and with a whiteboard, but I would clean that whiteboard off every day and I would pack up my computer and go on the road. And so I've lived that life for a long time. And that's a part, just a piece of this remote work. So working from anywhere, whether it's at my lake house or at a customer site or in my home, gives me a lot of flexibility, and the genie's out of the bottle. So our team members that really didn't have that option before. Leaders had it, entrepreneurs had it, but the other folks on the team really didn't have that option broadly. They do now, and they've experienced it. They've had a taste of it. And so for those types of work, the thinking, creative, innovative work, it's a balance between being able to do that work on your own in a way that suits you, which could often be more remote, and the balance of that being collaborative in nature and co-creating with team members. And so I know that the productivity is higher when there's remote options. And what is lost is the personal human connection. And so the right answer is a bit of both. It is going to be a blend of having more time to be able to focus on my work and my creativity in a way that suits me, but also not forgetting that I'm a part of a bigger team, part of an organization. And so being a good citizen, if you will, is being a part of that at more thoughtful times. And so it gets harder for the boardroom and the C-suite. It's just harder to manage those things because culture no longer is management by walking around and water cooler conversations. Those things don't happen as much. You just think differently, more creatively about when we bring people together, when we're doing a gathering type event, how do we maximize that investment and be prepared for that investment versus just randomly, informally, casually trying to get a temperature check by walking around the office.
I think that's incredibly insightful, Ron. I like that you just said the investment part. As a CEO, I've had to understand, I got rid of my office, closed the door. Now we're a consultancy. We do work in the sales and marketing space. We do advisory work. We do revenue operation growth work. So it's a little bit easier for me. I've got 16 full-time employees and 29 fractional employees. So I've got people spread over four states, plus the fractional team that's literally spread over the continent. So that's easy, but I do miss the water cooler. I do miss walking around.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do miss that. So we've decided to get together once a quarter, and I spend a ridiculous amount of money. Actually, I spend a little bit more than I used to spend on the office to get the team together once a quarter. And I find that one-to-one, let's wrestle through this problem as a leadership team, does happen better around one table.
Yeah.
Have you experienced that? Do you have any advice for that with executive teams, or if you've got a big hairy problem, how to do it?
Yeah, well, certainly. I mean, my model with most of my clients now today in helping the teams be successful is to bring them together in person. That was before the pandemic and after the pandemic. What I learned in the pandemic was you can do pretty good planning work. You can be very efficient at making some, I wouldn't say simple, but some decisions as about planning and priorities remotely. What you really cannot do very well is that trust and connection piece that is required. And so when you put those together, making decisions about priorities and where to put our resources, our time and our money as an organization, connected with the trust and connection piece that people need to really understand the nonverbals and what's really going on, not just what's being said, the efficacy or the effectiveness of in-person for those types of sessions is still much higher. Now, and I don't have great measures for that, but I will tell you, I do this a lot. Right? I am working with client teams every week, multiple times. And so having done that many reps, we'll call it 100 plus full day sessions a year through the pandemic and before and after, there's no question that that experience is better in person. Now, that doesn't mean a lot of work isn't done well asynchronously between those sessions on Zoom or Teams calls. Mm-hmm. So keeping things going, momentum, updates, keeping the work going fits very well in a remote environment. But there are these moments, these experiences that I still believe requires that in person. It's just not as frequently as it used to. I think we took it for granted anyway, frankly, before the pandemic.
Interesting. So you see a lot of culture. And as we wrap up this first piece and
sure,
we'll move over into sales and marketing alignment, what's the one thing I didn't ask you that you wish I would have around culture?
Well, I think the question is, why should a executive team care, right? If it's not easy to measure, if it's not really obvious. And I think that the word culture to me is about caring. It is figuring out different ways and new ways with the technology and remote work so that your people know that you care about them, that they're leaders, that they're managers, that they're people that they look to for coaching really do care. And I don't just mean in a heart-to-heart human level, but they are interested in their work. They're interested in what they're doing, and they're wanting to help them get better at what they're doing and develop them and grow them. That is all a part of the culture in my world. It's how we bring people from where they were before they were part of our organization to where they are during their time with us and where they may go after they're with us. That experience of development and coaching work is a part of leadership team's responsibility that is often shirked or underlooked, I would say, undervalued.
That's amazing. Let me ask you free consulting here. I experience a feeling, and I realized, but every executive on the listening just went, ugh, feelings, whatever. I experience this feeling when I talk to certain people that are just in market norm driven businesses, like they don't really care about Rom. They don't care about Sean. They just, how am I going to make more money? My exit, my multiple. Like there's just a vibe. Have you ever felt that vibe? And I just
sure
think like, you know, I don't know how you end up in that spot, but I don't really want to work for you.
Well, I would say,
is that a real feeling? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have worked with, I don't want to name any names, but some, certainly some leaders that when I asked them the question, why do you exist beyond making money? They laughed and said, there is no reason I exist beyond making money. And I think that's frankly immature, no matter how old they are, in terms of consciousness and what it means to make a difference in people's lives. And money is a way to do that. So it's part of our belief system. And I believe that the actually interesting thing about this, Sean, is that the more you do care and develop and take care of your people and your culture, the better results you have over time, the better sustainable results. So quick hits and flips, I've done some of those. I've gone into an organization for a short period of time and turned some things around and created some value. But what really the measure of success for me was, did it keep going in a positive direction? Because there were some substantial fundamental changes. And so that's what I'm excited about doing. Of course, it's easy to say that when you've had success and you've made some wealth. And so I understand that people that are coming up and doing that, it might be a different look. But I believe very much, no matter what generation you're part of, that at the end of the day, the relationships that you have that surround you at your deathbed or that surround you when you're celebrating your huge victories, those people matter. And so I think all of us are in the people business, whether we think we are or we're not.
Wow. That's powerful, Ron. Thank you.
We sure appreciate you listening today. If you would like to get in contact with today's guest or stay in touch with us, visit our show notes. Additionally, to get the latest strategies for the alignment between marketing and sales, visit fitzmartin.com. As a reminder, if you have found value in today's episode, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, or your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, thanks for listening.